This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Enar. Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight, as always, is my friend and co-host Dave, Admiral Dave, I should say, as it's written on the video. Hello, Dave, how are you?
Hi, Yannick, I'm very well indeed. Yeah, I thought I'd have a chuckle with the captions on StreamYard. Just...
Unfortunately for you, I'm going to remove the caption and add a very beautiful red banner.
Over the top of Jerome's face.
Ooh, yes.
I might have given something away there. Sorry.
Yeah, well, we have indeed a guest tonight, and it's our good friend Jerome. Hello, Jerome. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Hello.
Hello. We had the pleasure to meet you at Occam this year, although we did see you at Occam last year, but I don't recall we interacted last year, so it was a real pleasure to meet you. And we discovered that you're a Star Trek fan, and then we invited you on the show, and here you are.
Yeah, yeah, you really made some trouble there. You started this podcast, and since Occam Sheffield, I'm sort of into podcasts, and. Then you started with season 4, and I abandoned Enterprise in season 1 years ago. So I really had to catch up and start binge watching, and it grows on you.
Yes, it does.
Even with people saying, "Oh, episode 3, the season 3, just skip it." I didn't. I pulled through, and now I'm in sync with your show.
Let me get this straight. You, in order to prepare for this podcast, you binge watched all 4 seasons up to this point of Star Trek Enterprise.
Yes, that is slightly correct, but I anticipated the invitation. So it's not nice. Like you invited me and then I started binge-watching. I was already binge-watching when you started your first episode. Then that was when I started the binge-watch.
Fair enough.
If I recall correctly, I invited you 3 weeks ago. So yeah, watching four seasons in 3 weeks.
No, I haven't. I've binge watched since your episode 1.
Ah, that's nice.
And now I'm a little ahead even.
Ooh.
You.
I almost watched the other episodes, and then I thought, you know, why spoil it? I will just watch them as we go. So
yeah, sure.
All right, so I guess it's time now to start our review of today's episode, Star Trek Enterprise Season 4, Episode 14, The NR. So in the teaser, Admiral Valdor gazes out a window on Romulus, while Senator Vrax complains that the mission has become a disaster. The Romulan Senate expected a political discord throughout the Alpha and Beta quadrants, but for the first time, the Andorian and Tellarite governments have formed an alliance. Valdor thinks it won't last, but the Romulan Senate doesn't share the Admiral's opinion. Vrax, who regrets supporting the mission, blames Valdor for weakening his position in the Senate. Claiming that Vrax will eventually become First Consul, Valdor reveals that the second Romulan drone ship is now ready to be launched. Since it was the crew of Enterprise that brought Andorian and Tellarite delegations together, his plan is to use both drone ships to destroy Starfleet's flagship. Now, where the heck does that second drone come from? I mean, we've never heard of it. Seems like they just took it out of a hat somewhere and then... It's magic. There's a second one.
It does appear to have come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, they made a very large food dispenser and then just cloned it.
Spaceship replicator.
Yeah.
Well, technically, they should be able to replicate almost every part of the ship, but...
Yeah, but not an entire ship, you would have thought.
No. I guess it's like a 3D printer. You can print many small parts, but...
Yeah, but why not? if you can synthesize them, why not duplicate as much as you like?
Yeah, part by part, maybe.
Yeah.
So on to Act 1. In the briefing room aboard Enterprise, T'Pol informs Archer, Reed, Tucker, Phlox, and Shran that the drone ship is being navigated using telepresence. Shran comments that in the past, the Andorians experimented with telepresence for a short period of time, but without any results. Reed and Tucker realize that they were indeed alone on the ship. T'Pol suggests that the crew of Enterprise build their own telepresence unit to interfere with the Romulans' navigation of the drone ship. She also states that the data which Enterprise gained from the Romulan vessel included a brainwave pattern of a highly telepathic individual, the pilot. T'Pol explains that telepathy is apparently required to operate the drone ship, and Phlox mentions that the pilot is seemingly related to the Andorian species.
That was very quick.
Yeah.
To come to that conclusion.
Yeah, almost. It's like with the second drone. It just comes out of nowhere as if they were in a hurry to get into the rest of the story. Maybe they wanted to have two episodes and they only had one. I don't know. But yeah, maybe. It's just now that I think of it, they had time to go to... they didn't go to Babel 1. They went back to the Tellarite's homeworld and then they were coming back to Andoria. So yeah, between the two episodes, they had a little time. And T'Pol is good at this kind of thing, so... Mm. Yeah, maybe. But still, yeah, it seemed a bit rushed.
Yeah, a little bit.
On Romulus, Nijil reports that Tucker and Reed caused considerable damage to the drone ship. He is also concerned about the pilot, who is currently mentally fatigued, operating the vessel alone. The Romulan scientist doesn't dare to imagine what might happen if Valdor orders the deployment of another drone ship. The Admiral advises Nijil to increase the pilot's stimulants, even though they are already at a dangerously high level. Nijil worries that the pilot may die, resulting in the end of their mission. Valdor shows little concern for the pilot's well-being, however, but tells Nijil to be certain that the pilot survives until Enterprise is destroyed.
See, I find it really interesting that they're treating the pilot as though he's nothing more than a soldier or a pawn even, when it's actually in their best interest to look after him. If the pilot is running to capacity, then any increase in workload is likely to kill him, which is not in their interests.
No.
Yeah, it's completely inhumane. He's a tool.
Yes.
Yeah.
As if it's dispensable, but I don't think they have a spare, so that's weird.
Yeah, exactly. And Nijil seemed to care a lot about the pilot, but Valdor not at all. Which is, as you said, as you both said, very strange because they probably don't have anyone to replace the pilot. Meanwhile, Shran enters the captain's ready room, where he tells Archer that Andorian scientists have analyzed the brainwave pattern and concluded that the pilot is Aenar, a blind Andorian subspecies of ice dwellers. Due to their highly secretive nature...
Wait, again. A blind? That he is blind, the pilot?
Yeah. Yes.
Why? I think only one was blind. The woman on the planet that you're going to
Shran
talk
said
about
that
later.
Every Aenar is blind.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was my understanding.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I have a remark about that later on.
Okay.
Due to their highly secretive nature, they were considered to be a myth prior to their discovery 50 years before in Andoria's northern hemisphere. Shran thinks it is unlikely that they built the drone ship and even more unlikely that they deployed the vessel due to their pacifist beliefs. Obviously, the ethics of one INR differs from the majority, so Archer and Shran agree to find out whose. Contacting the bridge, the captain instructs Travis to set course for the Andorian's homeworld at maximum warp. I find it strange that the Andorians didn't realize there was someone living in the northern hemisphere. I mean, they are at least as technology advanced as the humans, so they probably have satellites and sensors and things like that, and... I don't know, if maybe it's only me.
That's a really good observation. I hadn't considered that.
I mean, if he had said, I don't know, 200 years ago, maybe the 20th century, we still have some parts of the planet that I'm not even sure we have parts of the planet we haven't mapped already. But yeah, if it had said 200, 300 years, I would have agreed. But 50 years, that's middle of 22nd century.
Having said that, if they are in an area of Andoria that isn't inhabited or isn't known to be inhabited, and the Enars are clearly living underground or under ice in this case, then I don't really see how their technological advancement would have necessarily have identified them, unless they had technology that would have allowed them to see beneath the ice.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think you're right. I mean, I don't know how big Andoria is in comparison to Earth, for example. But in the time that we've been here on Earth, there are still sub-races, subspecies of humans that probably still haven't been discovered.
Well, okay. I mean, and Shran said that there's like a thousand of them left, something like that?
Yes, thousands, I believe, yeah.
Okay, they might have been very well hidden. Still, I still have a remark about something later on.
Mm. I did notice that in that last scene, Shran seems to have calmed down a lot.
Yeah.
He's usually very shouty, and he seems to have kind of leveled off a bit in his anger.
Yeah, I noticed that too. He's a lot more calmer.
Yeah, not so much an aggressive blue skin.
Yes. Exactly.
I do like us being pink skins.
Yes. Well, I kind of like the blue skin too.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a famous scene, and it's a completely different movie. I believe it was called Biko back in the 80s. About apartheid in South Africa, and there was this sort of judge, really racist judge, saying to Biko, being a colored man, why do they call you black? Because you're more of a sort of a brown. Well, upon his reply was, why do they call you white? You're more or less sort of a pink.
Yeah,
the judge didn't like that, by the way.
No.
In Sigbe, Tucker and Tipple work on Enterprise's telepresence unit. When Tucker exhibits signs of fatigue, Tipple advises him to rest. The engineer argues that the Vulcan doesn't have the same level of engineering expertise as he has, which will be useful in the construction of the telepresence unit. When Trip asks her if she has ever faced death like he did about the drone ship, she replies that she doubted her survival when Enterprise attempted to destroy Sphere 41. When Tucker asks what she thought about in that instant, Tipple answers that she wondered whether or not to transfer auxiliary power to the Starship Deflector Array, leaving Tucker disappointed at her reply. I mean, typical Vulcan.
Yeah, this is Tipple back.
Yeah.
This is her in how we would have expected her to be during season two. But I did wonder at the time whether that was just her being defensive. She put a barrier up because she was talking to Trip.
Yes, that's what I thought too. But I'm pretty sure that's actually what she thought at the time. But yeah, the way she said it and the way she acted during the whole episode, well, at least until they meet in the corridor, it was I thought she was doing that on purpose. And I guess I think I was right, and you're right too, that she was raising a wall between her and Trip. As Archer and Shran walk to the transporter, Reed is reluctant to let them leave without a contingent of Makos. There is a dampening thing surrounding the NR compound, which will inhibit communication between the surface and Enterprise. However, Archer insists that the Makos stay behind, as the NR might interpret their presence as a threat and refuse to cooperate. Stepping onto the transporter platform, the captain and Shran beam down to the frozen northern wastes of Andoria. I wear clothes warmer than what Archer had, just to go walk my dog, and he's going on the surface of a frozen planet.
He didn't seem very well wrapped up, did he?
No.
Yeah, and the temperature was minus 28 degrees, but is it Celsius or Fahrenheit?
No, I think he said Fahrenheit.
No,
well, he doesn't say anything.
He said 28 below.
No, I know it's not Kelvin. Oh, okay. I know it's not Kelvin.
If it's minus 20 at Fahrenheit, it's really freezing.
Yeah, but it's an ice planet, so yeah.
Yeah, but no, I guess...
I think it would be Fahrenheit because it's a US show.
Yeah.
US, they don't know Celsius.
Yes, they don't know so many things.
Well, they know it, but they don't use it.
Dear listeners, live conversion between Fahrenheit and Celsius.
Yeah, I'm already working on it.
Thank you.
Minus 28 Fahrenheit is very cold.
Minus 33 Celsius, so not too far.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, minus 33. That's not impressive.
That's not, yeah. So that could have been either. Or. When Archer remarks that it is minus 28 Fahrenheit below zero, Schwann responds he is lucky it's the middle of the summer. The captain and Schwann begin to search for the entrance of the Einar compound. Schwann tells Archer that Andorian cities are subterranean and are designed to use geothermal energy. Nearing the entrance to the compound, Schwann falls to his knees, experiencing balance problems due to his cut antenna. Notifying the captain that the tunnels ahead of them reach out for thousands of kilometers, he and Archer enter the Einar compound. So now we know why the Ushan was cut short last week when he lost his antenna. That's because he's losing his balance.
Of course, you can't be in combat if you've got no balance, can you?
Yes, of course. So that's
that makes sense. That's,
yeah. I mean, the rules was to end the Ushan when one of the combatants was incapacitated. So now we know why.
Yeah.
It would have been nice that they told us that last week.
Yeah, but then they would have lost one of the plot points for this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they could still have the plot in this episode, but I don't know. It seems like it was information we should have had last week.
Yeah, but it's these kind of questions that prompt discussion.
That's true.
Had we known about this, we wouldn't have spoken about it last week.
Yeah, but we could have made fun of of Tran. But yeah, I get your point.
More than we were.
Yes. Good point. Good point. On Romulus, Nijil reports that the pilot of the drone ship is resting. When he promises to ensure the pilot will be ready, Valdor comments that the scientist sounds like the soldier he really is. Nijil maintains that he is simply a scientist, but Valdor claims that mistakes occur when a Romulan forgets that he is a soldier from birth. The Romulan admiral recalls that he served as a senator early in his career. However, he made the mistake of challenging the precept of unlimited expansion and was expelled from the Senate. After Valdor lost his position as senator, he vowed never to repeat his error and never to forget his purpose. Satisfied that Nijil has learnt the moral of Valdor's tale, the admiral orders the Romulan scientist to continue with his preparations. So he was friend with the senator, but he was almost a good guy. When he asked if they actually needed to expand. I mean, probably he got expelled and he got angry and now he's one of the bad guys, but I think he could have turned as a good guy.
Yeah. I've got something to say about the dynamic between Nijil and Valdor, but I think I might leave that until later on. Because I'm noticing quite a fundamental difference between the two, but it's something that we've identified in previous episodes. So I'll leave this for now and I'll pick it up later.
Okay. This is a teaser, dear listeners. Stay tuned for Dave's big reveals.
You're going to be so disappointed.
On Andoria, Schwann notices holes in an ice tunnel roof that were left by burrowing ice bores, worms that generate warmth through a chemical reaction. When Archer and the Andorian reach a steep incline inside the cave, The captain suggests that they look for another way to the bottom of the slope. Trent disagrees and foolhardily starts his descent. Suddenly, he falls to the base of the slope. Seeing an icicle jutting through the Andorian's leg, Archer hurries down. In agonizing pain, Shran insists on freeing his own leg from the ice. Bleeding and moaning, he lies on his back after hauling his free leg. As Inquisitive Enar observes Archer and the Andorian, the captain provides Shran with emergency medical aid, unaware that they are being watched.
Now, when Shran fell down the slope, I think it was actually him that said the ice gave out beneath him.
Yeah, right.
But actually, I don't believe that.
No, me neither. That's what I wrote in my review. Yeah, right, yeah.
No, okay. There was clearly some ego playing up there.
Definitely.
Yes. Yes.
This is probably not a point to say that blue blood is not really something that's possible in nature. You know, because we got red blood because of iron in our hemoglobin. We're running on rust. And and blue, I for the life of me, I can't see what could temporarily absorb oxygen to and turn blue at the same time. But well, maybe I'm a purist. Sorry.
Yeah, you're part of those. 20% who noticed
the non-believers.
Yeah, it was how do you say that, gruesome, that ice pick through his leg and the noise it made when he pulled his leg out. I mean, I was like, okay, do that quickly that we can, you know, go to something else.
I should point out we've just been joined in the video chat conference by Nate.
Hey, Nate.
Hi, Nate.
And he has suggested that the blue blood might be because they have a quantity of nickel in their blood.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Mm.
So that would mean that nickel bonded with oxygen should turn blue? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long time ago that I had chemistry at school. Very long time.
On to Act 2. Archer tells Shran that the Andorian's leg has stopped bleeding. If he and Archer stay where they are, Shran fears that they will freeze to death. Archer attempts to contact Enterprise, but they are well inside the dampening field. When Archer asks how far they are from the Enar compound, Shran indicates that they are not as far as they thought. An Enar female and other members of the of our Andorian subspecies step out of the shadows towards Shran and Archer. The captain informs the Enar that Shran requires their assistance. A young female agrees to provide the Andorian medical aid.
Did they mention a dampening field before? Because I think this is the first time they've met.
No, did they?
Yeah, they did it at the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay, I missed that.
When they were going to the transporter with the Malcolm said that they should take some Meko with them. He talks about the dampening field.
Okay, fair enough.
How can a wound that big stop bleeding in such little time?
Because it's cold.
No.
That would slow down the circulation.
No. Not a hole like that.
Yeah, there is a new material. Well, new. It was new when I read about it. This is a couple of years ago. It's a sort of a fluid that you put into a really gushing wound, and it immediately binds all the flesh together and stops the bleeding. Yeah, it's in use in military, of course. But
I'm pretty sure there's a lot of nasty side effects.
And I didn't see anybody carrying that.
No, and the demo was with a really juicy steak, so I don't know if it's practical in real life.
Nate said that he used that stuff in his military days, and it burns like crazy. Yeah, I would think so. It tends to cauterize.
Well, okay, if it keeps you alive, I think you'll accept the fact that it burns.
Yeah, the only effective way to stop a bleeding is what Rambo did in Rambo 3 or 4, I don't know. Yeah, putting gunpowder directly in the wound and lightning
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the first one he was sewing up his wounds. Yeah, that's a guy. That's a real guy.
Yeah. On board Enterprise, Phlox comments that he wishes he had more information on the neural interface which connects the pilot to the telepresence unit. Due to this, he states that connecting someone to the unit will be dangerous, possibly causing brain damage. Trip seems certain that there must be some way to make the interface safer, although the doctor responds that they have learned everything they can from the diagnostics on the Romulan drone ship. Trip voices his wish to be the first to try the unit. T'Pol reminds him that he is not telepathic, and that the trial wouldn't be a true test of the unit's effectiveness. But the engineer argues that the experiment would at least give an indication of whether the neural interface is dangerous. When T'Pol coldly states that she will test the unit, Tucker maintains that she is the highest-ranking officer on board the starship and is not expendable. The engineer asks her to wait until the captain returns, but T'Pol is intent on having the unit ready by the time of his arrival. She declares that the discussion is closed and walks away.
There she is.
Yeah. A good old Vulcan. Well, she's not that old, but... Actually, is she? I don't know. I think she said in previous seasons that she was, I don't know, some 100 years or something like that. And I can see you go to Memory Alpha.
How can you see me doing this?
I know you.
She was born in 2088. We're now in 2154. So oh, that means she's
really young.
76?
Yeah, something like that.
66.
Still a youngster.
Mm. Now, I'm really not happy with the whole argument that Tucker gave about her being the highest ranking officer on board and therefore not expendable. That flies completely in the face with something that we said, it was either last week or the week before, when Archer was about to sacrifice himself. I can't remember which episode it was now.
4 weeks ago in the Observer Effect.
That was it. And he said he was the best person to remove his gloves to help administer whatever it was he needed to do. But it's not about being the highest ranking officer and being the least expendable. It's about being the right person for that particular task. Even if this is the whole point of the chain of command, if T'Pol is the right person to do something, then the ranking officer then by default becomes Trip.
Yeah.
That's what it's for.
But I agree with you, but to have a discussion and a counter argument in the Observer Effect, there were only two people in there. That's the Doctor and Archer. And at this time, as Archer said, the Enterprise needed the Doctor more than a captain. But here, she could probably wait for Archer to come back, or maybe it would make sense to maybe not, you know, that she wouldn't go first. If she's the best one suited for the tasks, maybe she should only do the task when they know that the unit is not dangerous. Expand a few red shirts before, and then.
Okay, that answers that question. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't agree, but yeah. It's a good contra argument.
I also think that T'Pol is doing that partly because she thinks that she's right, and also partly because she just wants to show Tucker that that she can, you know, she can do that. I think there's a little bit of both in there, not just that because she's the most qualified to do so.
Mm.
I'm sure that if that situation had happened like 5 weeks ago, she might have considered letting Trip do it. But in this episode, she just wants to show him that she can take care of herself, and he doesn't have to worry about her.
Okay, yeah, I'll accept that.
In one of the NR City's room, Archer watches as an NR female enters and walks to Schwann. She tells him that he will soon be fully recovered. The Andorian thanks the physician shortly before the doctor leaves. When the NR female tells Archer his name, the captain believes it is proof of her telepathic abilities. However, she explains that the NR strictly prohibits telepathy without permission. She learned the captain's name when the Andorian chancellor contacted her species. When Archer asks to speak with an NR leader, the female replies that she has been chosen as speaker in this particular case. The captain wonders if she knows why he and Shran require her species' assistance. She answers that the Andorians have told her that Starfleet believes the NR are involved with attacks on the Alliance ships. When the captain says that it's more complicated than that, she asks permission to read Archer's thoughts. He accepts, and the NR female soon believes that the evidence which has been gathered to prove that an NR was in control of the Romulan drone ship appears irrefutable. However, she is extremely disturbed by the thought that a member of her race could cause so much death. She postulates that Gareb, an NR citizen who disappeared the year before while collecting ice bores, may have been abducted and forced to control the drone ship. She reminds Archer and Shran that they need someone to control the telepresence unit on Enterprise and leaves the room, telling them that she will consult with the other NR. Now, there's an awful lot of light for blind people in this underground city. It's bright as in bright sun.
Yeah, but what is ice? It's just glass.
Yeah, but why would they need some artificial light sources? And there are light sources everywhere.
Oh.
If everybody would be blind, you don't need light. Right.
Exactly.
But they knew they were expecting guests.
Yeah, they just put on the lights to be hospitable. Yeah.
And they also seem to look people in the eye quite a lot, even each other.
Yeah, but you can identify where a voice is coming from, so you can move your face to point towards it.
Yeah.
Yeah, why would you use your voice if you're telepathic?
Bingo. Nate says maybe the lights are also a light source, heat source.
Yeah, so the whole city melts.
Nate.
That's a bummer.
See?
Yeah, we had a city, but then we had guests and everything melted, so.
And mild heat source, he says. No, but in an igloo, because the thing is made of ice, you can have a fire on the inside of an igloo and it won't melt.
Fire, a candle. That's a difference. Yeah. That's true, because then the inside melts into water, which freezes because of the outside temperature, which better isolates and makes the igloo stronger. So, but you only need sort of a candle just to get it a little bit above, maybe one degree or something. Not much more, because, your igloo would melt. Yeah.
So here's a question then.
Yeah.
She came to the... Sorry, this isn't about ice and melting points anymore. She came to the conclusion that Gareb was involved very, very quickly. She didn't give any other possibility. It could have been any of their kind that had been lost or whatever. But she managed to identify this one Enar who had disappeared.
Yeah, a year ago.
And she's come to the conclusion that it's him.
Yeah, if you're a peaceful people and suddenly you miss somebody, that sort of stands out. Hey, where is everybody? Yeah, we're missing one.
But to say, I get that. If you're a close-knit community, you will notice when someone goes missing.
Yeah.
But to say that Gareb may have been abducted and forced to control a drone ship, that's one hell of a conclusion to come to.
But maybe Gareb is the only one who disappeared.
But that's assuming that it's an Enar. It may not be.
I don't think that they were thinking that he was commanding a drone ship. I think he was missing and he was telepathic.
Yeah. And Archer has proof that it was an NR on the drone ship. So one NR on the drone ship, one NR missing. 1+1.
Yeah. It's evident, dear Watson.
But there are multiple different ways of getting to the result of two.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, how can Romulans abduct an Enar without the Andorian noticing. Because I agree that maybe they didn't detect the presence of the Enars, but a Romulan ship coming into the atmosphere, probably landing, transporting an Enar, going back, I'm sure they... Well, if they didn't detect that, then...
They made an ice trap, a mouse trap made of ice, and he walked right into it.
How did the Enar not spot that an Enar had been abducted? Because there would have had to have been another life source nearby in order for the abduction to take place.
Mm-hmm.
So their telepathy must have been able to pick, you know, another presence out of the sky. I'm clutching
the same here. Telepathic frequency? I don't... Romulan brains are not compatible with the inner brains? I don't know.
Move on.
Right. Nate has got a good one.
Yeah.
They use a Romulan telepathic cloaking machine. Device.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Of course.
Yes, of course. How
obviously
could we miss that? Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Nate.
Nate to the rescue.
As Enterprise continues its orbit in the Andorian system, Tucker enters the mess hall and orders a strong coffee. Walking through a corridor with his mug, he wanders past Tipple. When the Vulcan calls his name, he eventually stops walking. Tipple informs him that his concern for her is appreciated. He claims that he is only trying to make sure Enterprise doesn't lose a good officer, although Tipple believes that his emotions are interfering with his duties. Trip disagrees and retorts that his feelings are completely professional.
Liar.
Yeah. He walks away as the Vulcan looks on. Second time that she calls him Trip in...
Yes.
What, four episodes? Five?
Yeah, spotted that.
Yeah. I would have liked to see... What mug he has. Did he have a Star Trek Enterprise mug? Maybe one with the future Starfleet logo. Also, doesn't the replicator in future series replicate the cup? Because he had to bring his own mug in this episode, I think. I don't remember Picard bringing his mug around and ordering tea Earl Grey hot.
No, I don't. That's a very good point.
Well, it's simple. I mean, it's a spaceship, but in a way, they're all working there. So they're working in an office. And in an office, everybody's got their own mug. So they just, when they board the spaceship, everybody brings his own mug.
Yeah, so that's why I would have liked to see what was on the mug.
Go Enar.
Oh, Nate says they don't have replicators yet. So
right.
The food synthesizer is not really a replicator.
That answers my point, is that if it was a replicator, it wouldn't have poured the coffee into the cup.
Yeah.
The coffee would have appeared.
Right.
But you could clearly hear in that scene the coffee being poured into the cup.
So it's a very expensive, very elaborate coffee machine.
An espresso machine, yes.
300 years after now, and they still can't make a decent coffee machine.
and now I need to do something with a microphone, an Arduino, and my coffee machine. Damn Star Trek. Nate, we have something to talk about. An automatic coffee dispenser. Anyway, as Shran lies in his quarters, a young Enar female stands over his body. She is surprised when she realizes he is awake and, fascinated by Shran, explains that she has never met a blue-skinned Andorian before. She adds that she can't explain how she can tell he has a blue skin when she is blind, and asks about the Andorian's home. Shran tells her that every few years the temperature rises above freezing for several weeks. She regains a serious expression when she remembers the reason for her visit. She wanted to apologize to Shran for unintentionally sensing his thoughts when she first saw him. She relates to how he must feel to lose Talas when she divulges that she is Gareb's sister. She seems certain that her brother would never intentionally harm anyone. The young Enar female confesses to having experienced recurrent nightmares concerning her brother.
I've got to say, their sense of ethics is really quite strong. she didn't have to go up to him and apologize for, you know, inadvertently picking up his thoughts, but she clearly felt the need to do that.
Yeah, maybe because she wanted to, you know, just as she said, to relate that because she's Gareb's sister, so she sensed that Shran was sad about the loss of Talas, so she just wanted to, you know, share a common
and there's clearly a connection between the two.
Yeah,
I would say she's got the hots for him, but on a cold planet, that's weird, right?
Good one. Meanwhile, two Romulan officers lead Gareb to the telepresence unit on Romulus. Nijil asks for his forgiveness shortly before he injects the pilot with stimulant.
Right, so this is the bit I mentioned earlier on. Why would Nijil feel the need to ask for forgiveness? Now, I'm picking up, in general, across most of the storylines that we've discussed so far this season, is that there seems to be one typically atypical character in a given race, in a scene that we see. So, you know, in the Cyrenites, you've got the subordinate in the Observer Effect. I suppose to some extent, T'Pol. All of these individuals are demonstrating atypical behavior to their own race. And Nijil here is doing almost everything against what we learned from Valdor is the Romulan way.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yes, he seemed to be really caring for the pilot and for the subject, for anything actually. Later on, he doesn't want to necessarily destroy Enterprise, and I think it might be, it might remind Valdor of what Valdor, who Valdor was when he was younger, when he was a senator, as someone who doesn't necessarily see the need of perpetual expansion, which is as you said, atypical for a Romulan.
But it's almost as though they're right. I'm not a racist, but it's almost as though they're behaving like humans.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I'm done now.
The Romulan never were part of the Federation.
Well, not yet.
No, there's no Federation yet. But even in the future, I don't think they will ever be part of the Federation.
Well, maybe in 5 years, I don't think Star Trek in any variation will stop. So,
yeah. Well, maybe by in season 3 of Discovery, maybe we'll learn that one day the Romulan. One day they will have joined in the past of the future. That's make any sense.
is that a reference kind of to the Timeless series that's also on Netflix?
No.
Oh, okay. I just binge watched that one.
Of season 3 of Discovery that is going to be in the future. So anything in the past of the future of Discovery might be in a future of the past.
Yes, you
series.
Lost me.
I've lost myself. Back on Enterprise's sickbay, T'Pol is wearing the neural interface helmet. She gasps as Phlox activates the telepresence unit, but her condition stabilizes and she seems to be doing well. When Phlox reports that her synaptic response has become erratic, T'Pol insists that she will recover. However, her condition deteriorates and Trip orders Phlox to power down the unit. Trip removes the interface helmet from T'Pol's head and, scanning her, Phlox makes a positive diagnosis. T'Pol is relatively unharmed. T'Pol informs Tucker and Phlox that she will rest for a few minutes before testing the unit again. What exactly is relatively unharmed? I mean, you're harmed or you're not, but relatively unharmed? Is that like you have just a little bit of problem? But yeah, that's not... Nobody's going to notice that you're losing your left ear.
Yeah, but it could be a non-physical harm, which she would have suppressed anyway.
Yeah, relatively. Yeah, I mean, but there was some damage, but she will recover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then she wants to just rest for a few minutes. I mean, I know Vulcans are tough, but she didn't seem very fit to resume using the unit in a few minutes.
Vulcan.
Yeah, but I think she was trying to show Tucker that that she doesn't need any of his concern, that she's tough.
Maybe she's trying to remind him that she is Vulcan.
Yeah.
And not succeeding very well.
The ears should give that up.
Yeah, they sort of give that away. Yep.
In a room within the inner city, Archer attempts to convince the speaker to help bring an end to the Romulan drone ship's violence. When she tells them that the Hena won't participate in the use of violence against the drone ship, Shran believes that he and the captain are wasting their time and leaves. Archer reluctantly follows. With their system ready, Valdor gives the order to launch two Romulan drone ships that depart Romulus at warp speed to intercept Enterprise.
Mm.
End of Act 2.
Just to revisit the whole Romulan Federation thing, if this was indeed the question, because I may have misinterpreted it, it looks as though the Romulans have never been anywhere near the Federation.
Yeah, okay.
That was the question, wasn't it?
The question was, did they join the Federation?
No, they didn't.
No. That's what I thought, but just wanted to make sure.
No, I've had a look through the excuse me, the members of the Federation page on Memory Alpha, and the only time that Romulan is mentioned is on the sidebar at the bottom where it says other popular pages you might want to look at.
Yeah. Well, Act 3. On Andoria, Garib's sister advises Shran to rest as they walk with Archer through an ice tunnel, but the Andorian refuses. Archer informs them that they will soon be out of range of the dampening field. When Shran asks Garib's sister if she is sure that she wants to leave Andoria, she replies that she wants to help save her brother and wonders what Enterprise is like. Captain Archer describes the starship as warm, which makes her smile. I mean, the Enterprise is just a little bit more than just warm, but it was a nice touch. I had to listen twice to understand what he said, because he just said one word, and I was not sure I was I heard that right the first time. In Enterprise's sick bay, Tucker asks Phlox if the doctor thinks it is wise for T'Pol to test the vessel's telepresence unit again. Phlox replies that T'Pol knows the risks of using the unit and is simply doing her job. When he advises Tucker not to interfere with T'Pol's duties, Tucker suspects that perhaps the crew of Enterprise have lost their sanity. Phlox believes Tucker is crazy to attempt to have both a romantic and professional relationship with a member of the crew. Tucker blames the doctor for the Vulcan neuropressure which initiated the engineer's relationship with T'Pol. However, Phlox reminds him that the Denobulan recommended neuropressure simply because Tucker was experiencing problem sleeping. When Tucker asks Phlox how he should deal with his feelings for T'Pol, the doctor states that he will simply have to suffer through it. Thank you, doctor.
Like everybody else in the universe. That's
yes.
I found that a brilliant remark.
Yes, Phlox is always like that. And yes, indeed, it's the only cure.
Yeah, he didn't appreciate that answer. That was fairly obvious. But seriously, what did he expect? That there was some kind of, you know, universal compound that would fix a broken heart?
Yeah, here's a pill. Take that and you will be well in 2 days.
Yeah, we just mentioned a compound that would fix physical bleeding. So now we're talking about a compound that would fix a broken heart. That's interesting. I see a trend coming up in this episode.
Open him up, drop it in.
Yeah, not sure. On Andoria, Archer looks up at the roof of a nice tunnel which he, Shran, and Garib's sister are traveling through. There, the captain realizes that they are running in circles. Garib's sister explained that they are not letting them see the path to the surface. At that moment, an holographic projection of the inner speaker appears in a tunnel opening before the group and tries to persuade Gareb's sister, Jamel, to return to the city. Archer protests that Jamel is acting on her own conscience. Using her telepathic ability, the speaker discovers that Jamel is doing what she believes to be right. Accepting Jamel's choice, the speaker's projection disappears, revealing the tunnel behind her to also be a projection. Following Jamel, Archer and Shran walk through an opening to the surface of the planet. They were like 2 meters away from the outside, and Archer Tricorder couldn't pick that up. I mean, sometimes they pick things up at hundreds of meters away, and but not there.
Yeah, that's always with batteries and cold, you know, then the voltage drops.
Yes, of course. I haven't thought about that. That reduced the range of the tricorder to a few centimeters.
Yep.
Yes, thank you, Jerome. Thank you. Back on Enterprise, T'Pol informs the captain that they are too far away from the Ticonderoga, a cargo ship that has been missing, to detect the freighter on long-range sensors. She adds that Enterprise will arrive at the cargo ship's last known coordinates in approximately 6 hours. Archer tells T'Pol that he wants Lieutenant Reed to finish upgrading the targeting scanners so that Enterprise will make more effective shots if they encounter the drone ship again. T'Pol leaves the captain, heading for the armory. And I'm very happy, because, okay, 6 hours is a round number, but she said approximately 6 hours. So I'm happy. It's not just a round number. Yes. Well, 47 minutes would have been better, but yeah, we'll go with approximately 6 hours.
Well, 5 hours and 47 minutes is approximately 6 hours.
Yeah, for example. But, yeah, well, yeah, okay, that would have worked. As Archer enters sickbay, Tucker reports that Jamel is ready to test Enterprise's telepresence unit. At first, Shran thinks Jamel is uncomfortable using the unit. However, she describes the experience as strangely enjoyable and raises the unit's power to maximum. Archer tells her that she is doing incredibly well, and Tucker suggests simulating a course correction. Suddenly, Jamel's breathing becomes erratic. Phlox reports that she is having synaptic trouble. As the NR's whole body starts to shake, Shran demands that the unit be shut down. Tucker removes the interface helmet from around Jamel's head, and Phlox administers the NR with a mild sedative. Yeah, at first I didn't understand what they were trying to do, simulating a course correction. I thought this unit was only to interfere with the drone, and apparently they made it so that it could change the direction of the drones. Just me, maybe. On the bridge, T'Pol reports that the starship's sensors are detecting debris consisting of hull fragments, nacelle casing, and several human bodies. Archer orders her to search for the drone ship's warp signature. When T'Pol asks the captain about Jamel's condition, Archer replies that the NR will recover. However, it would be too dangerous for her to try again. Archer comments that his visit with Shran to Andoria may have been a wasted journey. In sickbay, Jamel regains consciousness and asks Shran, who is standing over her, what happened. The Andorian replies that she had a convulsion and that she is now recovering. Jamel reveals that she had a dream about her brother and appears to be annoyed with herself when she recalls that she failed the experiment. Shran answers that she should be proud of her courage. Jamel smiles and comments that Talas must have been a fortunate woman to have had a relationship with Shran, although the Andorian boasts that he was the fortunate one. When the NR claims to think her brother will die, Shran refuses to let her believe that.
There's a definite thing happening here, isn't there?
Yeah, Shran seems to care a lot for Jamel.
Yeah. Now, if you've looked ahead, if you know where this goes, then it kind of makes sense.
Okay, so no, I haven't.
No.
I don't click on the Memory Alpha's link.
I know, it's terrible. I mentioned this last week. It's absolutely terrible. It's so you know, you're looking at an article and every other word is linked.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, okay, so let's just click on Jamel and, oh, no.
let's take a moment to acknowledge the awesome work that Memory Alpha does.
As always.
On everything, because they hotlink pretty much everything they can. It's amazing.
They do more cross-linking between articles than Wikipedia does.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job, guys. Mm. On the bridge, Tipol detects what appears to be a Tellarite freighter dropping out of warp. Archer orders Sato to hail the ship and Lieutenant Reed to target the vessel's engines. Tipol suggests that the ship may simply be a freighter, although there is no response to Sato's communications. The vessel is at 100 kilometers distance from Enterprise when Archer gives the order to open fire. It was strange. I don't know if you noticed that Oshii didn't have a line in the scene. She just nodded twice and she didn't say anything.
Interesting. Maybe she was being paid by the word and they ran out of budget for her. I don't know.
I don't know.
Just as an aside, Caroline and I play this game a lot when we're watching certain television programs here in the UK, particularly where there are a lot of extras and a lot of auxiliary characters. We'll notice that one of the primary characters will go up and speak to somebody, and they'll either nod or mouth a response, but they won't actually say anything, and that's like they didn't get paid.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if they only have to act, they are paid less than if they have to act and have a line.
If I'm correct, then a lot of times it's just re-recording the audio by the actors, because the audio recording in the field is so bad that they just use it as a sort of a guideline, but mainly re-record everything in a studio.
I don't know if they do that, if they still do that.
I wouldn't have thought they would have done that for this.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, if you look at... Coming soon from the Other Side Podcast Network, Bond reviews. if you look at a lot of the Bond films, those are pretty much overdubbed from start to end.
Yeah.
And it's so obvious you can see it. And there are some television programs you notice it, but this, no, I've not spotted that.
I think they did that a long time ago, but I'm sure that the technology has evolved.
This is, of course, recorded in a studio, so you don't have a lot of noises, background noises.
Do you mean they don't go in space to shoot the series?
But this last set of scenes was recorded underground in like blocks of ice.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, sure.
Were you watching?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So gullible. Okay, yeah. Continue.
Let's continue with Act 4.
Yay.
As the two vessels exchange fire, the unidentified freighter loses its form, revealing that it is, in fact, the drone ship. Dun, dun, dun! The bridge of Enterprise shakes as the enemy craft fires at the starship. Archer orders Reed to target the drone ship's weapons, but the vessel is moving too fast and the lieutenant can't get a lock.
Yeah, it's doing that dancing around thing that we mentioned last time. It's amazing to see.
And you should have been happy to see some external combat scenes.
Oh, spoiler alert, I'm mentioning that later.
Ah, okay. Forget about that. In sickbay, the NR sits up and insists that she use the telepresence unit. Jamel claims that she can sense her brother and is certain she will be able to make Gareb stop his attack. Shran advises the doctor to allow her to use the unit again, although Phlox is not too keen on the idea. On Romulus, Nijil informs Valdor that Enterprise is suffering extreme damage. The Admiral orders Nijil to use the second drone ship to target the Starfleet vessel, but the Romulan scientist believes that more force may not be required. Valdor demands that Nijil follows his order, and the scientist eventually complies. On Enterprise's bridge, Reed detects the arrival of the second drone ship, which appears as an Andorian battlecruiser. Scanning the craft's power signature, T'Pol confirms that it is not an Andorian vessel, and Archer demands that Reed targets the ship. When T'Pol recognizes the telepresence unit in Sigbay has been activated, the captain contacts Phlox. The doctor informs him that Jamel is insisting on an attempt to use the unit again.
Question.
Yes?
So T'Pol scanned the second drone.
Yes.
And realized that the power signature was not Andorian.
Right.
But she didn't do that on the first one.
Maybe she was not asked to do that. I don't know.
I wouldn't have thought it was anybody's job to ask her. She should have worked that one out for herself.
That it's sort of obvious that that's probably a drone ship because of everything that happened to them until that point. But then the second drone ship shows up and it's like, oh, okay, well, is somebody going to help us? Oh, wait, the power signature is off.
Yeah, I would say it's plausible, given that, you know, there was no second drone previously. It's the first time they get a second drone.
Again, so why scan the second one that they didn't know was a drone and not the first one?
Yeah. Agreed.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And also, how come she has a light on her dashboard for the telepresence unit in Sigbay? It's just because it's convenient. Maybe
my
she has
guess is she's got like a complete bank of unused lamps, LEDs on her console, which are directly connected to banana plug sockets or something all around the ship. So they just plumbed the telepresence unit into one of those in sickbay. That's what it is. Must be.
Okay. Well, maybe she has lots of indicators for everything in the ship. Everyone, every time someone, you know, flips a light, there's a button flipping on the console. I don't know. Enterprise trembles as the second drone ship sheds its holographic skin and joins its counterpart to exchange blows with the starship.
Now, this is the bit where you see some really, really good quality external weapons fire.
Yeah.
So I did appreciate that.
All the budget they didn't spend in the last three episodes.
Exactly. There. Also, did Enterprise really tremble?
I don't know. Also, when the Romulan said, oh, Enterprise is taking a lot of damage, that's not really visible on screen. No, that's true. Usually you have like lots of sparks and you know, cables falling from the ceiling and things like that on the bridge and explosion outside of Enterprise. But, I mean, here, yeah, okay, there was some impact on the hull, but it didn't seem to be that big of a damage, but... They spent the budget on the firefights. They couldn't simulate the damage. In sickbay, Jamel is not doing too good. However, the NR maintains her belief that she will be able to save her brother and stop the attack against Enterprise. When Phlox's equipment signals an emergency, the doctor instructs Shran to disconnect Jamel from the telepresence unit. However, the Andorian has faith in Jamel and refuses to comply with the doctor's order.
I'm sorry, I have got to applaud you for that. That was fantastic.
Really?
The removal of the phrase cortical fluctuation from the review.
Well, I didn't want to quote the episode word for word. So.
No, exactly. But apparently a cortical fluctuation is where the outer layer of the cerebrum... pulses.
Fluctuates.
Yeah, fluctuates, exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, I removed that.
We're playing Enterprise buzzword bingo again by the looks of it.
That's it, yeah. Yeah. In the Romulan Command Center, Nijil notes that Enterprise has lost warp power. He also exclaims that someone is hacking into the telemetric array. Sensing Jamel's presence, Gareb is confused that she is still alive. When he asks her where she is, he learns that Jamel is aboard the ship that he is targeting. The pilot instantly stops his attacks, which Valdor notices. Well, I mean, the drone stops, so yeah, he will notice. Oh, it's not working anymore. On Enterprise, the crew also realize that the drone ships, which are now defenseless, have halted their assault. Meanwhile, Gareb telepathically communicates that the Romulans has told him he was the last living member of his species. He feels guilty that the Romulans lied to him and forced him to destroy so many ships. Jamel appeals to him to end the violence now. Nijil is alarmed when the Romulan drone ship attacks each other. When Valdor directs the scientists to disengage the ship's weapons, Nijil states that he has lost control of the vessels.
Did he have control of the vessels?
That's what I was thinking. Gareb had control of the vessel all this time.
Maybe what he meant was he's lost control of Gareb.
Yeah. Also, was it just the presence of Jamil on the Enterprise that stopped him from attacking? Or could he have done that all along? I mean, it was not really clear that he had some kind of, some kind of wake-up call or something that made him change his behavior.
So there's a separate part to this. In what was it that was compelling him to do what he was ordered to? Was it that was forcing him to control this drone, knowing that by doing so it flew completely in the face of all of his ethics, his standards, the things he's known growing up? It's in complete violation of everything that makes him Enar.
Yeah, and let's imagine, for example, I don't know, I'm the last human in the universe and someone abducts me and tells me to do some strange things. I mean, no. Okay, you want to kill me? Okay, kill me. I'm the last one of my species, so doesn't matter. Everyone I care for is probably dead, so yeah. I don't know. It's strange that he was subdued like that. Maybe he had some chemicals or some things like that, and the presence of Jamel, gave him a big shot of endorphin or something like that.
It's possible. I mean, on the occasions in this episode where we've actually seen Gareb, he has appeared zombie-like.
Yeah,
to some extent, as if he's not in full control of his faculties.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a possibility. He may have been drugged.
Maybe. When Reed notifies Archer that the drone ships have become suicidal, the captain instructs him to fire a full spread of photonic torpedoes at the ships. On Romulus, Valdor threatens Gareb that if the drone ships don't target Enterprise again, the NR pilot will be killed. Nijil tries to stop Valdor, but two Romulan officers hold the scientist back. Gareb asks his sister to remember him after his death as one of the drone ships explodes. In his frustration, Valdor kills the NR pilot.
I didn't expect that.
No, I didn't expect that either, but it's... I think it's typical Romulan.
But it's going back to the conversation we had right at the beginning of the episode when we realised that he is the only pilot, the only person they have that can actually drive these drones.
I think Valdor realizes that everything is lost, so he just, passes his frustration.
Or he's just primarily in his reactions, frustration, and just lash out, and that's it.
Yeah, it's either that or break the dishes, and it didn't have any dishes.
Exactly. And there was no replicator to make dishes, to throw away.
Oh, that'd be so much fun.
Yeah.
Doing the whole Greek restaurant thing where you're throwing dishes on the floor as quickly as the replicator can make them for you. So it almost like drops them onto your hands. You're going, bash, 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 bash.
And then you have a transporter to pick the pieces from the ground to somewhere where they are recycled. Great.
Or great idea. If they can be thrown far enough in the future where transporter technology is at the stage where it can actually reform things. Yeah. So you give it a pile of broken crockery and out of the other end comes a brand new dish. You're starting again.
It probably needs a little bit more processing power than we currently have on this planet. Yep.
Oh, come on. I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure Raspberry Pi can do that.
Raspberry Pi.
in the 22nd in the 22nd century, they probably have a Raspberry Pi 27 or something like that, or 47. Raspberry Pi 47 will be a great one.
With a heatsink the size of the Empire State Building.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Phlox and Shran disconnect Jamel from the telepresence unit in Enterprise's sickbay. Firing photonic torpedo, the Starfleet vessel destroyed the remaining drone ship. Now, why did it take so long to fire those torpedoes? I mean, Archer said, send the torpedoes, and then there's like a full minute, and then they shoot the torpedoes.
But they were firing torpedoes.
Those torpedoes, no. They all run Windows 10, and it was just in the middle of an upgrade.
Yeah, that's probably the reason, yeah. Yeah. We are upgrading your torpedo.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't fire. don't fire.
Well, that's their first mistake, still using Windows 10 in the 23rd century.
They should have moved to Windows 12. Duh.
Well, we're using Windows 10 in this century, so why shouldn't we be the same dumb in the 23rd?
True.
Well, Windows 10 was designed to replace all previous versions of Windows and become the baseline for all Windows versions going forward. So it's possible they could still be using it.
Well, the First World War is said to be the war to end all wars. And see what that brand
was. And then
they had
a second one. Yeah.
That worked so well.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I sent in our Telegram group, I think, a picture of the original Enterprise with McCoy, Kirk, and Spock looking at the screen and with an error, a Windows error of screen.
Oh, yeah, on the main screen.
Blue screen of death, yeah. So, yeah, that's proof.
Yeah.
On Romulus, Valdor realizes that the mission is over. He stands as Gareb's head folds to one side and Negil removes the interface helmet. In Enterprise's sickbay, Jamel is relieved that the drone ships have been destroyed and that they won't be able to do any more damage. However, she is also saddened by her brother's death and embraces Shran in both despair and relief. Yeah, there was something between them.
Yeah.
She almost appeared relieved that Gareb had died as well. It's a really difficult one to try and articulate because you've got, on the one hand, she's just lost her brother. But on the other hand, she is relieved by the fact that he's not suffering anymore.
Yeah.
Because clearly he was.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and she said later on in the episode that if they hadn't come, he would have died alone.
Yeah.
So
but
it's
she
sad,
was with him,
but,
so...
As they near the transporter, Archer thanks Jamel for lending her assistance to the crew of Enterprise. Jamel concludes that if she hadn't accompanied Shran and Archer to the starship, her brother would have died alone. See, that's what I was saying. I read my review. Shran reveals that the Andorian Imperial Guard rarely rewards a commander who has lost his ship with another one and suspects it may be a long time until he sees Archer again. T'Pol offers to provide assistance to the Andorian in any way the crew can, an offer which Shran appreciates. As Enterprise continues its journey, Tucker enters Archer's quarters. With the engineer's report displayed on a pad in his hand, the captain says that he feels Trip is being too negative about his own behavior. Tucker blames himself for missing a 10-degree variance in the telepresence emitter, but Archer tells that Phlox doesn't believe the variance is related to Jamel's near-fatal seizure. However, Tucker argues that he should have been paying more attention to his duties and informs Archer that he is interested in a transfer to Columbia Annex O2. Although Archer finds Tucker's decision difficult to accept, the captain eventually does and dismisses the engineer. Tucker exits Archer's quarters, leaving the captain alone in quiet reflection. The end.
This was a long time coming.
Yeah.
Even taking into account the whole issue of the telepresence emitter being, you know, taken out of the equation completely, we could already see that Trip was really starting to struggle with his feelings for T'Pol. As we saw in his exchange with Phlox earlier on in the episode. So I think it was inevitable that Tripp was going to request this transfer.
Yeah, of course. It's as you said, inevitable.
But would not make any logic in the eyes of T-Paul.
Of course.
It's not logical.
No, absolutely.
It's not logical, it's just sentimental.
But then again, we're humans.
Yeah, we're humans. We're imperfect.
Okay, so there's just this one other thing. Admiral Valdor, right? The bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does any of you recognize him from other movies?
Yes. I did look into him because he looked very, very familiar.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. His face. He has square face.
Yeah. He's actually been in quite a few other Star Trek-y type things.
Well, the thing is, when this series of three started and I saw Admiral Valdori, I immediately recognized his face as being, well, the archetypical bad guy face. And I looked it up because I knew the scene and I forgot the title. But so I looked it up. His name is Brian Thompson. And I recognized him from, wait for it, he was the Night Slasher. That's a role name. No, sorry. In Cobra. And Cobra with Sylvester Stallone being this badass cop with his own car and, you know, the lone avenger kind of role. But so Cobra was the name of the movie, but that's back in the 80s or something. I know I'm getting old, but it must be his son by now. But no, it's the same guy. He aged pretty well for a bad guy.
Yeah. And he played in X-Files too. I remember.
He was also in one episode of The Orville.
Ah. Didn't he play in one of Stargate?
Yeah, probably, because he goes on IMDb. He's got some 100-something roles. So, yeah, he surely worked a lot.
Jeez, he's done a ton of films.
And probably he's a really nice guy. Can't help it that he was born with that kind of face. But the face itself, it's a bad guy's face.
Yeah.
Well, where I recognized him from, there's a TV series running at the moment in the US called 911. Mm-hmm. And it's based around the New York Fire Department. And he appeared in two episodes as the same character. But amusingly, although he looks really different, because obviously there's, 14 years difference between this episode of Star Trek and the episodes of 911.
Uh-huh.
I managed to spot him. And I was really quite pleased about that.
Yeah. Speaking of American series, there's currently this series. I don't know the exact title, but the plot is about a president who is pretty dumb, and he tries to make a deal with another prime minister in a sort of a Eastern Europe kind of country, and then other are thinking that he is betraying his own country, and they start investigations, and I forgot the title of this soap, but...
Is it called The News?
Oh, that's it! Yeah, right!
I'm watching the same program!
Yeah.
Oh,
is it blonde actor?
Brilliant.
Well, that's... concludes our review and a bit more of the review of Star Trek Enterprise Season 4, Episode 14, The NR. So last week, we talked about something that we wanted to check. So just to put that in context, at some point during last episode, Valdor said that the drone would resume warp capability in 2 minutes. And then a few moments later, he said 20 seconds. And we wondered if they could have done everything in a minute and 40 seconds. So I went back. I took my stopwatch, which is my phone. So is it a stop phone? I don't know. And I actually measured the time. And, well, they were a lot faster than what we thought because they only took 1 minute and 20 seconds. So this should have been 40 seconds at the moment, but there was only 20. So maybe they cut some scenes. In the final cut, I don't know, but yeah, I thought it was funny enough to mention this week, even though it's totally uninteresting.
No, that's brilliant. It's very geeky.
Yeah, right. Well, it's interesting. It's just not related to this episode, but it's funny. Yeah.
For the record, the topic was named the last week's 1 minute and 40 seconds dilemma.
Because dilemma.
It was okay. Really, yes, a dilemma.
That's what the banner should be saying right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Although it may not have fit.
Yeah, it uses smaller fonts when the sentence.
Oh, does it?
I now have two monitors next to each other, so it could fit on my end.
Yeah, I do have two monitors, but I feel like I need a third one.
Yes.
Well, Dave, it's now that time again to talk with our guest, so take it away.
Right, so Jeroen, you have been a Star Trek fan for, I would presume, quite some time.
Yeah, well, I was born in 63, so I was 5 with the original series, and they were aired in black and white. We had a black and white TV at home. And yeah, I was glued to the screen in those days. To boldly go the other planets, the thinking of another way of thinking. It's the philosophy of Roddenberry. You know, it's it struck a nerve. And of course, in those days, well. Couple of days, years later, you also had the Thunderbirds. That's not. What else did I see? A classic, Blake 7 from the UK. I even have nowadays the DVD box of several seasons. Although it sort of resembles the original series in the way that they try to tell a science fiction story with the limited resources being our planet. Yeah, so, And then lots of years there was nothing, and then they sort of started again, you know, with Next Generation and the Outpost, Babylon 5, that I never looked at, by the way, but...
You've never watched Babylon 5?
Nah. Oh,
it's really good.
Yeah, probably. But no, I was more the Captain Janeway and the Jean-Luc Picard. Those two. Yeah. 7 of 9. Yeah. Oh, man. Ooh. That was somebody to have a look at. Definitely.
Yeah. And she's coming back with two pistols.
Yes. Sorry, I saw Yannick's voice when you mentioned Janeway. Yannick's face, sorry, when you mentioned Janeway.
Yeah.
So, if you were only 5 or 6 when the original series first aired on television, and you were, I'm going to say, fortunate enough to watch it the first time round. Now, obviously, when we're watching it now, we're looking at it and thinking, yeah, this looks really dated. The sets look really plastic and cardboardy. It looks really quite, you know, crap compared to some of the stuff that you see on television nowadays. How did that appear to you as a young child?
As a young child, oh man, can you remember the scene where Scotty is in one of the, it's sort of a big pipe where he's in? And then above his head are the sparks flying around, and he needs to put his tool, screwdriver kind of thing, in an area with a lot of high voltages, and he doesn't have to, he can't move left or right because he would electrocute himself. And I replay that at home. I would climb under the table with one of the tools that I had from a hammer or a screwdriver or something, and try to work above my head and thinking I was Scotty. Yeah, definitely.
Wow. Yeah, I think I must have missed out on that kind of experience when I was growing up. I was a 70s child, so my first experience was on the reruns.
Yeah, uh-huh. I've watched the original series very, very late. First time I watched them was not that long, maybe 5-6 years ago. Before that, I had seen a few episodes here and there, but I bought from the internet the original series.
1 year later, in the evening, my parents and I was the oldest one. And we were watching the television with some pretty crappy black and white stream, watching the Apollo moon landing on the moon.
Wow.
I wish I'd seen that.
And it in hindsight, we have witnessed so much technological advancements in our lifetime, even as a 70s child, compared to generations before us, for instance. I mean, you know, the first computer was somewhere in the 50s, approximately. And nowadays, we buy Raspberry Pis like they were candy and play around with them. And I've got one here, you know, I've got several Pis, but one is a Pi 4 with 4 gigabytes. Although you can't address them fully in Ubuntu 9.10. I put a fan shim on it. I love this stuff. The latest was piece of hardware, sort of latest. When I was at OrCam Manchester, somebody there with the MyStorm project. So you have an FPGA, and this FPGA can be programmed to it's not even emulation, it's just the original hardware in a way, for even an Archon Atom. An Archon Atom was my personally first computer that I finished high school, and I worked for 2 months and during my vacation, and I had enough money to buy an Archon Atom, and that was then 1600 guilders, which would translate roughly to 800 euros. Wow. In 87 was that? No, 82. Sorry, 82. Mm. And if you see what kind of processing power you now get for that kind of money, that's different.
Just for the record, I have 4 Raspberry Pi here on my desk.
Yeah.
And 2 microcontrollers.
Yeah.
Well, I probably have enough power to run the Apollo mission.
But I also recently bought a VT220 terminal that's standing here on my desk, and it's even connected to my PC over serial 6900 baud. My recent acquisition I bought yesterday is an original Teletype modeled 32.3. So the Teletype where Unix was developed on with Cunningham and Ritchie. Well, not the actual same one, but the model.
The keyboard printer thing.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And it's they're pretty seldom these days. Actually, I got it for a bargain. I hope he doesn't watch this show. Otherwise, when I go to pick it up, you'll probably renegotiate. But these things, I think, are going to be sort of valuable antiques. Well, not that that's the reason. It's not an investment object. It's just that, fond memories.
Yeah, well, they're museum pieces, aren't they? They're reminders of how technology started.
Well, I do run a museum, you know, the AS400museum.org. That's me. Silly old me. I've got 7 AS400s. And it's just to make sure that kind of stuff doesn't disappear, because companies bought them, used them. At some point, they weren't in use anymore. Then they got rid of them, and they probably got scrapped. And in a few years' time, nobody knows what a mid-range system is anymore.
Yeah. Nate says he would like to have a VT220 to access his Linux box. And I agree. I would love to have one of those to just, you know, just to plug on a Raspberry Pi, because sometimes you just need to have a small screen, a small terminal and a keyboard just to enter two or three config files, and then you can access it via SSH. But
yeah,
just for the fun of it.
I'd just keep one there all the time with a Pi attached to it. I wouldn't worry about setting it up for anything else.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the risk of turning this into anything not Star Trek related.
Oh, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
We never do that. Never.
Never every single week.
Well, so I'm pretty fascinated by technology, and I like to keep up with modern developments, and it still fascinates me to this day. And Star Trek, in a way, is just an extension of that. There is so much thought, well, at least in the original series, and there are several things in more recent series also where people have really thought it through and make it at least plausible what they're using, and it's never too far fetched.
I would agree to a point. I mean, I think there are some elements where the whole willing suspension of disbelief has been pushed to its limit, but I think that's probably one of the reasons why I prefer Star Trek over that other thing that starts with the word star, because I honestly believe that Star Trek is more believable. And I know that sounds really crazy, and there are probably people listening to this going, what are you talking about? But I think there is a lot more grounded content within Star Trek, things that you can relate to in your daily life. We've discussed this with Nate previously about how you can translate Star Trek into your daily life.
And Ryan.
A couple of more Raspberry Pis and put a piece of can around it, and you've got your R2-D2.
So if there are some Star Wars fans that want to prove Dave that he's wrong, send us some feedback and we will invite you on the show.
Yeah, I'd love to hear the other side of the argument. May not agree with it, but...
Yeah.
Also, that famous phrase, I may not agree with what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's also one of my firm beliefs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So, any more questions?
Oh, yeah. I believe...
There are some more questions.
Yeah. It is time for a new banner. Let's switch banner.
Switch banners.
No, it's time for a really awesome 70 kick fire questions. Okay. Hit me. Give me your best shot, punk. Do you feel lucky?
Right. You know the rules?
No.
Good. There aren't any.
Okay, great.
So, 7 questions, quick fire. All right, the first thing that comes to mind. Are you ready?
Yes, no guarantees. Go ahead.
Right. Favorite series?
Lassie.
Of Star Trek.
Oh, Star Trek. It was the first thing that came to mind. Okay, Star Trek. And then I've got to make a quick... Yeah, The Next Generation. I think. Yeah, Picard with his sidekick. What's his name? Yeah, brilliant.
Riker.
Yeah, and Data. Hilarious. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Favorite film?
Ooh.
They were easy.
Okay. A Star Trek film or any film?
Star Trek. No, this is a Star Trek podcast.
Oh, Star Trek. Okay. So I have to focus everything on Star Trek. Right. Okay. I would say I forgot the title, but the one with Mr. Cumberbatch being the bad guy.
Well, that'll be one of
the recent ones.
Kelvin. Yeah.
Star Trek Beyond. Star Trek.
Star Trek Dark. This one. Star Trek Into Darkness.
Into Darkness. Okay, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Do we accept that?
We have to.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, for this time, though.
Oh, and the other one.
Okay.
A tie. It's the first Star Trek real movie, you know, with V'ger. Voyager
the,
coming back.
Star Trek the motion picture.
Yeah. The whole concept of sending out a satellite and then returning an upgraded and well and looking for his maker. Yeah.
And sending a ship full of people in PJs.
Okay. Next one.
Next question. Favorite ship at Star Trek?
At Star Trek. Favorite ship at Star Trek. Well, now I would go with the original one. The original series. That's my first ship, and yeah, with Scotty and all the.
The Enterprise NCC 1701.
Yeah.
Okay, favorite or best captain in Star Trek?
In Star Trek. Yeah, I got it.
Or Admiral. Who captained a starship.
Yeah, the one that speaks in chopped sentences. No. Yeah, Picard is a classic. Definitely. I mean, Janeway was charming, but yeah, Picard is. He will. Well, there's a reason why they asked him back. So, he exudes all this wisdom. Yeah, definitely. Engage. Yeah.
That's fair. Okay, favorite or best character?
Well, like I said, Seven of Nine has her charms. Data, when he tries to become human, hilarious. The holographic doctor, also funny in a way.
I agree.
Yeah.
Go on, pick one.
Oh, pick one. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, Seven of Nine. Come on, Seven of Nine. Just, yeah.
Good choice.
Well, thank you.
Seven of Nine, because.
Yes, just because.
Okay. Next one, favorite storyline. And this can be an arc plot, a single episode, or even a film segment.
Oh, there was one in the fourth season that really moved me. And which one was it? Let me have a look.
Okay.
Oh, wait, that's not in the fourth season. It's somewhere in the three series. But then it was a filler episode. I don't know. I have to look it up. The other one would be the original series, Pike. You know, and on the planet where these big minds could make all your wishes come true in a way. You know what I mean?
No, I don't remember that one. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, I've not really watched that much of the original series. And when I have watched them, they've been casual viewings rather than what we're doing at the moment with going into too much detail.
So they land on a planet and everything they see sort of doesn't add up, and then suddenly they at some point they discover that the inhabitants of this planet are so mentally powerful that they can project anything you like onto the visitors, and so in a way it's blissful ignorance, and for once they use that for people, giving them an ordinary life where they are in reality physically deformed. So that's a good thing. Yeah, that's one to notice. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
I agree with everything that has been said. Just for the records, dear listeners, I once again crashed. Well, my internet crashed. So
the final question then, Jerome, is favorite or best villain?
Oh, Q, hands down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you very much indeed for those.
Uh-huh.
Yes, thank you. I know those questions, they seem easy when you're listening to the podcast, but I tried to to answer them as if I was interviewed on this show. And I have to say, the first one are easy, but the last one's not that easy. So well done, Jerome.
Okay.
Well, that concludes our 7 questions to our guest. And with that, we have arrived to, I guess, the conclusion of this episode.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. So thanks to everyone who downloaded our previous episodes. We say that every week, but we're really glad that you take some time to listen to our little ramblings. Yeah. This is a Star Trek show, and we often talk about something that's not related to Star Trek. So, yeah, I guess it's just, you know, friends talking about things, and Star Trek is an excuse to spend some time together.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you once again.
Yeah, it was fun to do. Really is.
Yeah, it's always fun to do. For people who wish to come, but think that maybe, you know, what was the excuse from your colleague last time, that it doesn't have a voice for
radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
sorry, for the record, he has a face for radio. he may not have the voice for it. Sorry, well, James. You are smart. Yeah.
You have to work with him tomorrow. But what I was going to say is that, it's fun. Just come and join us if you wish to. It's really fun. It's really a good time. We spend a good time. We have a good time with our guests, and but we do hope that our guests have a good time with us.
It is worth pointing out, we spend a lot more time recording these shows than you actually hear.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're missing out on the interaction. And
absolutely.
If you just want to listen to us while we record this show live, you can join our Telegram group, and we will tell you how to do that later on.
You can help us very much by making the entire world aware of the existence of this podcast by writing the name of the show on the front of your house with Christmas lights, or...
Sorry.
But...
Yeah, or spray paint it on your car, or dress your children in sweaters with a promo of this podcast. Yeah.
Right, we'll have to take those off the list now, they've been said. Or, of course, you can, if it's easier for you to do so, you can share the address of our website on various social media outlets.
And talking about our website, you can find that at tearlgreyhut.org, and you will find the show notes for each of our episodes. You will also find the answers to all the quickfire questions if I decide to actually update this page with the answers we've got. And you will also find our reviews.
If you want to send us some feedback, there are a good number of ways you can do that. The first one is probably the most straightforward, and that is to send us an email. Our address is feedback@teearlgreyhot.org.
You can also join us on Twitter, Facebook, and Telegram. We are at TEGH Podcast on all those 3 platforms.
We're also on Mastodon, on the mastodon.social instance. Our username there is also TEGH Podcast.
As usual, thanks to Memory Alpha for the work they do. We have based our review on this week's episode on their work, and it is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
The rest of this show, unless otherwise stated, is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share alike license, which means you can do pretty much whatever you want to do with it, as long as you credit us as the original authors, and if you publish something based on this episode, you must release it under the same license.
And of course, this podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find out more about our shows at otherside.network, where we have Linuxy things, musicy things, and things that mix music and Linux, and we have this Star Trek show and other technological shows, and we release How many shows do we release per week now? We are regular shows?
Well, there are, I think it's 8 shows on the slate at the moment.
Yeah, so...
And I think at least 3 of them publish 1 show a week.
We do, you do with the Buckcast, and...
Binary Times is fortnightly, my apologies.
Yeah. Oh, so, okay, so that's 2.5 shows. Yes, but... So that's 2.5 shows a week. So, yeah, that's great.
Right, next week will be a review of Enterprise Season 4, Episode 15, Affliction, which I do believe is part of no less than 3 story arcs.
Wow.
Yeah, tell me about it. They're starting the 2 new story arcs, but it also continues our old favourite, The Augments.
Oh.
Indeed. And we'll also be rounding up our usual fortnightly news.
Well, thanks, Jerome, for joining us tonight. It's been a real pleasure to have you with us. And as one of our guests, you are automatically qualified, if you wish to do so, to come with us on... I am absolutely not looking at the date on the website now. On the 22nd of January, which is the week between our last episode about Enterprise and the first episode about Picard, and we are going to review what is usually viewed as the worst episode of Star Trek ever, which is Star Trek Voyager Season 2, Episode 15, Threshold, where they turn into lizards. So if you're free on the 2nd of January, you are welcome to join us.
I can hardly say that I have a funeral, so...
But we never know. It's Threshold after all, so any excuse will be accepted.
Yeah, okay. Let me think. Yeah, I'll try. That's the best I can do at the moment, sorry.
That's all we can ask.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for joining us. Thanks, Dave, for co-hosting this show once again.
It's been such fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, likewise. I really enjoyed it.
And I suppose thank you to you as well, Yannick.
You're welcome.
I suppose you were part of it, weren't you?
Yeah, somehow. I don't know what I'm doing here, but yeah, okay.
Who are you?
Let me think. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to this week's episode. Thanks, Nate, for joining us in the chat room. We will catch you all next week. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.